What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Fast Friday podcast on Sikkim365.com and iTunes, although not quite a Friday podcast, and as many of you have pointed out, not so fast at times, but it is the Fast Friday podcast, just a couple of days early because Thursday night it is Baylor versus West Virginia in Morgantown. The Bears looking for win number 5. The Mountaineers looking to bounce back, but hey, so are the Bears as well. Both coming off of an open weekend, kind of able to lick their wounds, heal up a little bit, and also rebound and regroup following what were devastating losses for both. West Virginia just beaten to a pulp, quite frankly, by Iowa State, or dominated is maybe a better word for it. And we know what happened with Baylor and Texas. We covered that all on last week's edition. But I'm Craig Smoke, Sikkim365.com team reporter, also host of UNR weekdays 12 to 3 on ESPN Central Texas, joined as always by team and recruiting reporter and director of broadcasting Grayson Grundhafer. And Grayson, a little earlier this week, but how are we doing?
Doing good, ready for some football. I think the bye week was nice. I think everyone got recharged a little bit, not just the football team. I think we did too.
Yes.
And, you know, coming down to this last stretch, really, you know, the second half of the season is the most important. It always is. This November, late October, November, you know, period is makes or breaks teams. And you want to make a bowl, you got to show up in this stretch. And so Baylor's got a great chance to increase their chances as they go against West Virginia on Thursday. But, you know, I'm enjoying the weather, to be honest. It's beautiful out in Waco, gotten a little colder, which is nice, but the sun is still out. And so, yeah, I'm just enjoying it.
I was worried with the weather last week. I'd already started thinking about the podcast and what that was going to be like and whether or not I was going to need to send you a text to get the heater ready because it was going to be a little frigid at the Sikkim 365 studios. But yeah, luckily this week it's actually been pretty beautiful. It's, you know, it's nice, calm weather. Skies are blue and the wind's blowing, but not too much. So it's perfect conditions. Now in Morgantown, it's going to be a little bit different. It's definitely going to be cold. I don't know what precipitation is expected or any of that. We can check on that for Thursday night. But it is going to be in a hostile environment. We do know that, to be sure. And it's going to be one of the only games in town. I mean, it's going to be the Thursday night game that most people out there are going to be watching. I think people will be intrigued to see whether Baylor's legit in winning 4 games so far this year and hanging close with a top 10 team like Texas down at their place. Will Grier obviously gets a lot of eyeballs as well. So I think there's going to be a rather nice audience paying attention on Thursday night for Bears and Mountaineers.
Yeah, I think so too. And they're going to sit in the cold.
Oh, great.
Because it is going to be 39 degrees on Thursday night. Definitely a change from what it's been in Texas. I think the lowest we had recently, I think it got down to maybe like 44, 45. So not quite the same, but 39 isn't something that's not doable. You're not freezing, but it's definitely going to be a change of pace for the guys. And a funny story from this week was Blake Blackmar talking about how the first time he went to West Virginia, he set his mouth guard down on their bench, and their benches are heated, and apparently they're super heated.
Yeah.
And he comes out, and his mouthpiece is completely melted from the spot. And he said, and then I'd sit down on the bench and I didn't want to sit because it was so hot. And so they might be using that to their favor a little bit, increasing the temperature a little bit on the opposing team's bench.
Wouldn't surprise me.
No.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Wouldn't
whatsoever.
Put it past West Virginia. No.
Not at all. So at least you've got a guy, a senior like Blackmar and some others who have experienced what Morgantown is like. It has not been a kind place to the Bears. One of the biggest Baylor seasons, you know, the blemish was the big blowout loss. Kevin White basically being able to do whatever he wanted to against Ryan Reed in the secondary. And what he wasn't able to do, the referees did for him. I mean, just yellow hankies everywhere. But that was a long time ago at this point. This is a much different looking Baylor roster with some veterans, but not many, quite frankly, that will be walking in on Thursday night to you know, what is, again, going to be a very hostile crowd. I know we got a couple questions about why it's so tough to play there, and we're going to get to some questions from the board coming up. But what we're going to do here to start things off with is just talk about this game itself. Then, obviously, with the bye week last week, the coaches were on the road. They were extending a whole lot of offers and Twitter was, you know, all in a flurry with new offers being reported left and right. I know you had a lot of notes, and everybody did on the board over the last few days on that front. So we'll go over that, and then we'll get into our mailbag questions and into our Big 12 weekly predictions, which will actually have a much nicer lineup than we did last week when there was just the two games for the entire Big 12 schedule. But that's to end the podcast. To start off, let's talk about this game. I am feeling pretty good about the way that the Bears are going to play. I think they're actually going to play well. I don't think that we're going to see them all that rattled. I don't think we're going to see them lifeless like we saw the year that I was referring to with Kevin White. But I also don't think we're going to see some big, massive upset either. I'm just not ready to pull the trigger quite on that for a variety of reasons, but kind of just your feel throughout the week. I couldn't go to the media sessions because they doubled up on Monday. They did Matt Rhule's press conference, and then the players spoke afterwards rather than the normal Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday routine due to the short week. So I didn't really get to feel or even be around anybody this week. And typically I can get a little bit of a pulse in talking to the players and kind of get a sense of things. It's not always 100% accurate, but it's about 95%. So what was kind of the pulse that you took away from talking to the players and also being there for Matt Rhule in person?
My pulse is that they are going to be ready for this football game, and I truly do not see them going in there and getting blown out like they did against Oklahoma. I just, the way that Clay Johnston and Blake Blackmore and Chris Platt, that the way they were talking, it seemed like they'd prepared really well this week, and it seemed like nothing West Virginia is going to do is going to surprise them. And so it seems like they're very prepared. And I would just say, you know, Clay Johnston mentioned that he thinks they can win every game on their schedule, every remaining game on the schedule. And so, you know, it starts this weekend, and or Thursday, I guess. And so he seemed to have a whole lot of confidence in this team, and they all said the same thing about the Texas game. They've completely moved on from that. You know, it was a tough loss, but they learned a lot from it. And so I think that they're going to take that as positive momentum going into West Virginia as opposed to negative. So we'll see how it plays out. But most weeks, you're exactly right. Usually we can get a beat on how the guys are sensing, if they're really ready to go, if practice has been good throughout the week. And I believe it did this week. And hopefully it went well yesterday as well at practice, and they were able to get a lot done. But, yeah, I think they are going to be good to go. And this will be a competitive game, and it has to be. It really does. They have to show up and compete on the road. Because if you don't compete in this game on the road, then that means you're probably not going to compete in the Iowa State game on the road either. So I think this will be a very telling game, in my opinion. And my other thing that I'll say about what I would kind of take away from watching this game is I want to see how Baylor handles this kind of form of an air raid offense, because you're going to get matched up against Oklahoma State on homecoming in a week. They're going to run a similar offense. I know they're not quite as good, but they run that kind of offense. You're going to face Tech at the end of the year that runs that kind of spread you out offense. These teams are not like Texas. They're more like Oklahoma in their scheme. And so I'm interested to see if Baylor can, you know, stay consistent and keep with their assignments, or if they're going to resort to what happened against Oklahoma, where guys were just running wide open down the field because the Baylor guys couldn't play in space. I'm gonna have a lot of takeaways from this game, so it's very important that Baylor keeps this game close.
Yeah, coming off of an open week, even though West Virginia is as well, and yes, they're also coming off of a loss. I don't think that theirs was, I assume, not nearly as emotional as Baylor's was, but they've had now a week and a half to get over that. This staff seems to be pretty good about focusing these guys, and they may not always play that way, but I do feel like we're going to see a very focused team. I mean, the one thing about going into Morgantown and on a Thursday night and cold weather is that they've had more than enough time at this point to not only get over the last result, which I think they've been over for days now, but also to get the mindset right for what they're going to be walking into. Had they had to turn around and play West Virginia the week after Texas, I think that would have gone really poorly and may have been blowout city, just because it would have been such a quick return to the field. But now they've had a while, and the thing about this team is they just hammer it home, and it starts with the head coach. Is they're not looking across and saying, oh, that's Will Grier, or, oh, that's this guy or that guy, or, oh, they do this or they do that. It's all about what they do. And I feel like guys last year were just sort of saying that. Man, there were a lot of times last year, and I just didn't really know for sure at the time, so I just had to roll with what guys were saying. But, you know, in hindsight, and even at the time somewhat, it just felt like guys were sort of going through the motions or saying what they were supposed to say because that's what they were supposed to say. Oh, we don't focus on the opponent. But I think when guys actually say that this year, they actually mean it. And I think with some of the results that they've had, especially the losses more so than the wins, that started to sink in a lot more and really has become the mindset of this team. So I don't feel like it's going to be a team that's shell-shocked or in over their heads or overwhelmed. The only reason they would get that way is because they perform similarly to, you know, maybe things they did against Oklahoma, like a dropped punt, you know, inside the 10-yard line. That's what will doom them and overwhelm them. But if they just execute and play a clean football game, I think we could be in for a little bit of a surprise. Not necessarily an upset, but a close game that, hey, the longer it goes and the closer it remains, maybe you do have a chance to pull out the first win out there in Morgantown. I'm not banking on it, but I do think, in comparison to if you would have asked me maybe a couple of weeks ago about this game, that they have a chance. A couple weeks ago, I would have said probably no, I don't think there's any way that they win this game. But now, a couple weeks later, I feel like there's a chance they could win this game, a very slight, small chance. But it's all dependent on how they play. Much like their mindset is all about how they play, it's how they play. It's not anything to do with what West Virginia does to me.
Yeah, and I think that is definitely right. And I would say that, you know, the OU game was kind of like that too. They basically did it to themselves at times. You know, it was self-inflicted wounds that added up, and then OU hit on big plays and attacked them down the field, and things opened up. So I agree. If they come out and really execute and don't make, you know, bad turnovers, bad penalties, things like that that you can control, then they should be able to compete pretty well in this game. But, you know, a few stats that I saw when looking at this game. The first one is Baylor is 3-0 when they run for at least 150 yards. 3-0 this year. When they're able to do that. Now, Abilene Christian, you should run for 150, so I get that. But they've had some success in other games as well. And, you know, the games that they have lost, though, you know, they haven't been able to run the ball at all. The Duke game, the OU game, and the Texas game, they ran terribly. And so, you know, you look at that and you just go, how can they manufacture some rushing yards? How can they get to the point where, you know, they can at least get a few yards and keep the defense honest? Because they haven't really been able to do that. And I think in this game, that's going to be vitally important. You know, one stat that I was looking at was, you know, when Hasty runs for 60 yards, they're also 3-0. And that completely coincides with when they've ran for 150 yards because every time they have, he's been a guy that has contributed to that really well, whether it was with 60 yards or 110 against ACU. So that's definitely something to look at. But one stat that I was looking at that is kind of one that they need to get corrected and fast heading into this game is the fact that in their three road games, UTSA, Oklahoma, and Texas, the three road games, they've combined for 256 total yards rushing. And
that's boo-boo.
That is absolutely not going to get the job done this week. I really don't think so. On Thursday night, if you go in and run for under 100 yards, I find it very hard to believe that there's any circumstance that you're able to win that game if you're only running for 90 yards. So that 150-yard mark is something that I think this team desperately needs to get to. If they want a, you know, a prayer to win this game. Another stat that I wanted to bring up was third down conversions. It's been one that Baylor has really excelled at this year. They're 14th with a 48% conversion rate. Even though they weren't great on third down against Texas, they're still in the top 15 in that category. The issue is they're 109th in third down defense, giving up 44% conversion rate. And the bigger problem is the team that they're playing, West Virginia, is 7th in third down conversions at 50%. 7th in the entire country. So that's going to be something to really look at, because against Iowa State, they were only 2 of 10, I believe, on third down. So Iowa State was able to force third and long by creating havoc plays, getting in the backfield, tackles for loss and sacks, and they were able to get West Virginia off the field and not allow them to convert third down after third down. And, you know, one thing about a no-huddle offense that likes to move fast, you need first downs. If you don't get first downs, your offense sputters a lot of times, and that's what happened against Iowa State. I mean, they only had 100 yards passing. I couldn't even believe that, seeing Will Greer only threw for 100 yards. So that's going to be a key stat to look at. Baylor has got to get them off the field, and in return, they got to convert some third downs as well. If they can keep West Virginia around that 35% or 30%, I think they'll give themselves a great shot to win this game. But those were the two stats that I really looked at as, you know, big factors in the outcome of this game.
Looking at total offense, total defense, those overall numbers, West Virginia's number 45 in total defense in the country. That's actually a couple of spots ahead of Texas. They are dead even as far as the amount of touchdowns they've given up and the amount of touchdowns they've scored. They've scored 15, they've given up 15 as far as the average goes, or not the average of 15, but offensive TDs, they've given up 15 and, that's right, 15 and 15. But 409 plays ran against them. They've given up 2,159 yards, an average of 5.28 yards per play. They've given up about 360 a game. Baylor offensively has been clicking lately, but they've been doing so as well without a running game, which has been kind of, you know, the miraculous part of it. The number 18 offense, total offense in the country, they're averaging around 475, so a good 100 yards or more than West Virginia has been accustomed to giving up, and that's kind of phenomenal, especially when you consider the lack of a run game that Baylor has had. I mean, we say it every week on this podcast, if only they had a little bit of a running game, and as you pointed out, when they do have one, good things happen, and when they don't, bad things tend to happen. But this isn't a West Virginia defense that like just scares me like it typically would, you know? I think some of the shine's worn off that a little bit. It's not as imposing as I feel like it once was, and I don't know if that's because of the recent loss that kind of took some of the shine off that, or the fact that the star that is Will Greer's Heisman campaign has fallen from the sky now. But it's just, it's a game that really I'm looking at, and the only thing that I fear about it is just, again, what Baylor does to itself, and not so much what they're capable of doing defensively or how explosive Will Greer and his skill guys are. It's kind of a weird feeling, and maybe I should be, you know, giving them, it's not a lack of respect, but it's just a matter of, to me, it's just very simple. It's just, how well do you play going into Morgantown? Because that's going to determine how the score goes, not so much, again, what they're doing.
Yeah, the only thing that is really different with West Virginia on defense is the fact that they run that 3-3 stack, and that's their formation on defense, and it's unlike any Big 12 team, anyone else in the Big 12. And, you know, Coach Rhule mentioned it this week, they can blitz from anywhere. And so it's going to be very important that Sam Tecklenburg and Charlie Brewer are able to read those blitzes and call them out and be able to avoid, you know, costly sacks on early downs especially. And so Baylor's definitely going to have their hands full, I think, figuring it out. But last year they really got things going against West Virginia in that second half. So I wonder if they can carry anything over from that game. You know, they were able to come back late in that game and had a chance to tie it up. Going for it on...
That was a Charlie Brewer breakout game.
Exactly. And so I just look at it, and I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if they were able to figure anything out from that game, and maybe they're able to, you know, bring that with them into this game. And that's basically the key thing about their defense, is that they it's just different. And so when you face someone that has a different defense than what you're used to and what you practice for, it typically, you know, it can sometimes cause confusion. And so, you know, Charlie's really going to have to stay grounded and stay focused on his job and be able to call out those blitzes like I talked about. But that's the other thing, though. West Virginia doesn't have that many sacks, and they don't have one guy.
They have less than Baylor does by a couple, but they still have less than Baylor does.
Yeah, and they have a bunch of guys with one sack. They only have one guy that has double-digit sacks, and that's David Long from the linebacker position. So
that's pretty good, though, double-digit sacks.
Not double digits. Multiple sacks. Two sacks. He only has two sacks. Yeah, no, my bad.
He's got at least 10?
Yeah,
jeez.
No, that would be unbelievable. But all these other guys only have one sack. So they're just bringing, you know, they're bringing a bunch of different guys to try to get to the quarterback, but they haven't been very consistent at it. And that's something that has been Baylor's biggest problem. So something's going to have to give there. Either West Virginia is going to be able to create pressure that they haven't been able to do all year, or Baylor is going to be able to protect the passer, which they haven't been able to do all year. So that's going to be something to look at. But that should keep Charlie a little bit clean in this football game. I don't know if they're going to be able to run the ball, but it should be able to allow him to at least find some room to step up in the pocket and make some throws.
They're not equal in every category, but there's a lot of similarities between these two teams, just numbers-wise. I mean, even looking at turnover margin, Baylor's tied for 87th. West Virginia's technically 97, but they're not really 10 spots behind so much as that Baylor's in a cluster of teams that are tied for 87. So just naturally, but West Virginia is like right behind them. Oklahoma State's behind them as well, and neither one's really good. They're all bottom of the top 100, but I mean, looking at a lot of the different stats across the board, there's a lot of similarities between these two teams. I just think it's West Virginia's ability to score and get into the end zone as opposed to settling for a field goal, or, well, they settle for field goals quite a – Baylor settles for field goals quite a bit. Not being able to execute in the red zone, that I think is maybe, you know, a bigger difference. But other than that, man, a lot of the areas that you look, it's kind of similar teams we're talking about here, just a different way of doing things.
Yeah, and I think a big difference also between these two teams and the guys, really, Chris Platt and Coach Rule talked about the lack of explosive plays.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a big issue for Baylor, and that's something that West Virginia has no problem with. They create explosive plays a whole lot, and they have throughout the year, and so that's going to be something that I think Baylor is going to need to hit on a couple of those, or at least give themselves a chance to hit on a couple of those in this game, because West Virginia is going to take those shots, and they're going to connect on a couple probably in this game. Whether that goes for touchdowns or not, I don't know, but they are going to take those shots, and they'll probably hit on one or two, and so that's just a big difference, because Baylor has to grind out drives, and they've had to do that every single week.
Man, they get to midfield, and it's just like, okay, let's see what happens.
Yeah, and it took you 8 plays to get to midfield.
Yeah.
And so you're just going, okay, your margin for error just is less and less because you're having to grind out these drives. And yes, you're able to, you know, hold on to the ball for a while, and that could be a key in this game if they're able to hold on to it for a while. But at the end of the day, if you just get to midfield and punt, and then West Virginia one play for a touchdown, you're right back where you were. And so and that happened against OU. That's exactly what happened against OU. So that's going to be, you know, a key, because that's what West Virginia feeds off of. They want explosive plays. They want those big, long touchdowns.
They want the sprint. Baylor's looking for the marathon. And the teams that they've really suffered against are sprint teams. And the marathon teams have actually fared pretty okay with, Duke notwithstanding. I mean, that was not one where they did very well. But how much do you put into the revenge factor, not towards Baylor, but just West Virginia looking to bounce back and being at home and having that extra juice, but also in some ways seeing what Charlie Brewer did to them last year and realizing, like, he's not going to walk into Morgantown and they're not going to be, you know, unaware of his skill set or what he does. They're going to be very well aware. Do you think that adds any ammunition to their arsenal or any extra motivation whatsoever? Is it could have been Gary Bohannon walking in there and it wouldn't really matter?
Yeah, I don't know if there's added motivation as far as Charlie walking in there, but I do believe the added motivation comes from losing last week. I do think that they're going to come back home and they're going to have a little more juice and a little more momentum, knowing that if they lose another game, I mean, they're basically playing for second. You know what I mean? Because if they went out, they could still, you know, maybe make the college football playoff. Not likely, but maybe. And so this is a huge game. Will Greer wants to get his name back in the Heisman. He's going to have to put up huge numbers. Probably not. No, but I mean, if he throws for 400 yards each of the next 5 games and wins out, it could. Mm. It could.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be anywhere from Ohio State after last week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very
true. I think it has been narrowed down. I mean, it's Tua, and then it's the field, and the field's Kyler Murray, and the field's, I guess, Will Greer still a part of that. And there's a few other guys out there, but kind of Tua's to lose basically at this point.
I agree, but I just really think that Will Greer kind of knows what's at stake. I mean, he's this big NFL prospect, and, you know, last week did not look good. Last week looked really bad. And so I think he's going to come in very focused, and, you know, Baylor's going to have to make plays. It's plain and simple. I mean, if they're going to give up an open receiver, I think Will Greer is going to hit that receiver this week. And so it's not just going to be some walk in the park. They're going to face a 100-yard Will Greer, because that's not going to happen again. And so they're just going to have to limit those explosive plays that allow him to really get going. You know, you just want to keep everything in front of you and force him to do what Charlie Brewer has had to do all year, and force him to dink and dunk with, you know, 10-yard gains instead of, you know, 50-yard gains.
One of the fascinating stats, we know Baylor's not a very good starting team. They're the worst is trying to get into halftime. That's where they're at their worst. But they also can get off to some slow starts from time to time as well. West Virginia's the opposite. They get off to fast starts. Now, the rest of the game might get a little hairy from time to time, but so far this year, they're outscoring opponents 73-27 in the first quarter. Baylor, meanwhile, every time they've fallen behind at the end of the first quarter, those are their three losses this year to Duke, Oklahoma, and or two of their losses, Duke and Oklahoma. If they can just limit the explosive plays is one thing, but I really feel like if they can just get through that first quarter kind of unscathed, and also get through that second quarter without giving up a flurry of points at the end, that'll be important. I think if this team gets to halftime, I think this is going to be sort of their MO. If they get to halftime and they're within reach, they have a shot in the second half, because I think they play as hard as anybody in the second half of ball games, and they've learned to not just, except for Oklahoma, not give up in the second half, basically. But, man, if they're trailing by, you know, 2-3 scores at halftime, and they were able to shake that off pretty well against Texas, but that's going to be really important to me. How does the first quarter go? Are you composed after the first quarter, and then are you able to get into the locker room at halftime and remain composed as well? Because I think if you go into the second half and it's a close ball game, then all of a sudden it's anybody's game. But it's the early flurry that I worry about, more so than just the general explosive plays. It's that early flurry that I think is going to be very important.
Yeah, and I think you're definitely onto something there, and that's an MO of any big-time, you know, no-huddle spread type offense. I mean, they want to get after you early and just score so many points that you just can't come back. And so I think they're definitely going to try to do that. And I 100% agree. Baylor needs to keep this game close at halftime. And, yeah, if they can do that, go into the second half and possibly try to pull off the upset. You know, I'm curious to see how they fare, because, you know, like I said, that OU game, I know it might have just been an anomaly, but – you know, there's really good receivers on West Virginia's team. They can kind of do the same thing to you if you allow them to. I don't think they have the type of running game nor the offensive line OU does to just consistently dominate and wear on you. But they just have such an ability to create big plays with those explosive receivers. And so, yeah, I think if Baylor can come out and play really good defense, keep the ball away from West Virginia a little bit in that first half, then, yeah, they'll give themselves a good shot. But if you're down by two or three scores, I think you might get blown out
badly. And you might, with a younger team, be completely overwhelmed at that point. If the crowd's rocking by halftime and they're all boozed up and partying it up in the stands, and that could rattle a younger team like this that isn't quite accustomed to maybe that kind of a scene, or digging themselves out of that kind of a scene. But, yeah, obviously you just got to keep it within arm's reach. The longer you do that, it's like fighting in a boxing match, and, you know, you don't get knocked out, but you're getting beat up a little bit, but you just keep making it round through round, and by the end you get that little extra surge, and maybe you come up with the one-hitter. Now, hopefully you don't need that lucky punch at the end to win this football game, but I just feel like it's all about staying close, not digging yourself too big of a hole in the first half, or even in the first quarter for that matter, and just remaining calm. We've seen some flashes of that, and I, you know, the way they responded in the second half against Texas after that flurry. But the thing is, like Matt Rule said, but they had that flurry. You know, hey, yeah, if that call doesn't happen, but it did happen. And not only did that call happen, but, you know, this call happened and that call happened and this turnover happened or this, you know, bad throw by Charlie Brewer happened or this drop happened. I mean, there's so many different things that went into all of these losses that, you know, man, it'd be really fun to see this team play a complete game on the road against a quality team like this and give themselves a chance.
Yeah, and that would give them a whole lot of confidence, much like the Texas game did. I'm also really curious how Baylor wants to match up with West Virginia.
I was wondering, I was looking at their receiver. You got Marcus Sims, who's got 500 yards receiving on the year, 2 touchdowns.
Burner, yeah.
Gary Jennings, 400 yards and 6 touchdowns. Oh, there's David Sills, 390 yards and 7 touchdowns. And then you got guys like, you know, TJ Simmons and Tevin Bush, but those three right there, that's about as solid as you're going to see. Now, granted, you can look around at almost every other Big 12 team. You know, Texas went Colin Johnson and little Jordan Humphrey, or Oklahoma, you got CeeDee Lamb and Hollywood Brown. You know, so almost everybody in the, I mean, look at Baylor with Denzel Mims and Jalen Hurd, although their consistency is questionable at times, but they should be used to playing some pretty good wide receiver combos at this point. This may be the best one overall, the like 1 through 3 that they've faced up until this point.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Baylor, you know, a guy like Jennings Jr. is a slot guy that's
hurt them.
Hurt them really badly.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see how they cover him, what they go with, because, you know, Lil Jordan Humphrey is a good receiver and he's physical, but he runs a lot of his routes almost looking like a tight end at times. Jennings is not like that. Jennings is a quick in and out of his cuts route runner that just gets open. And so I'm very curious how they match up with that. You know, Blake Lynch really had a great matchup with Texas with Lil Jordan. I felt like they matched up pretty well. I am not sure that he matches up as well with a guy like Jennings Jr. I almost think that maybe you go with the freshman, Christian Morgan, and maybe put him in there to try to slow down that slot receiving game. I think that on the outside, you know, Sills is probably the best matchup for Jameson Houston or Derek Thomas. I would say on the outside, maybe Harrison Hand, if he comes back, could also cover that. If I'm looking at Sims is the third one, right? Sims is the,
yeah.
Marcus Sims.
Stills. Or not, no. Sills.
Yeah, Sills is the one I think that Thomas and Hand might cover. But no, the other one, Marcus Sims, the burner.
Yes, he's a leading receiver at 498 yards, a couple TDs. He's not their go-to, obviously, for the
burner,
the red zone, because Jennings and Sills have the majority of their touchdowns. But yeah, he's averaging nearly 18 yards a catch. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and I could see Tejada covering him. I think that we've seen some good things. We've seen some good things from him, and especially against guys that want to beat you with the deep ball. You know, it seems like he runs with those guys really, really well, and I'm curious to see if he gets the start. I think that would actually be a pretty good matchup for him. I think he could do some things, and then if those big corners, Harrison Hand or Jameson Houston or Derek Thomas, can slow down Sills, which they weren't able to do last year. Sills had 3 touchdowns last year.
They killed them last year.
Destroyed
yeah.
them. And so I think that matchup will be a good one. And like I said, it's going to come down to what do they decide to do in the slot, really, is something that could be really interesting to watch this on Thursday. And, you know, Blake Lynch just came off a big game, but I'm curious if his fit is good for this one. I'm not sure if it is or not, because you got to be able to cover in this game.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Not just cover the run.
Mm-hmm.
And cover a big receiver. I just don't know. I've been thinking about that all week.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess a speedier guy's how he'll fare, because he is big and he's not super fast, and he can be kind of lumbering up, feel like, at times in a way. And he still is questioning himself. I mean, it was great to see him have a breakout game, but yeah, I wonder how he's going to follow that up. It'd be great to have Graylin Arnold in this game, but unfortunately, he's out. Sounds like till Oklahoma State next week, which will be nice to have him back, but he'd really love to have him this week if at all possible. Although with Matt Rule and injuries lately, you never know. He could pop up in that game and play like 20 snaps. Wouldn't surprise me at all if that happened, depending on kind of the situation. Elsewhere, I mean, they're relatively healthy for the most part from what he said. Xavier Newman's going to be back on the offensive line, possibly. At least it sounds that way. And the only other injury I can really recall that he mentioned was Xavier Jones, who we haven't seen here lately, and he's been dealing with a concussion protocol, extended concussion protocol. Tried to come back, wasn't ready. Don't know when we'll see him. It's very much like KJ Smith last year. Not the same injury, but just, gosh, just wasting away his senior year, quite frankly, due to injury. It's not anything he can do about it. But, yeah, Tejada, I almost forget about him just because he's so new in a way. It'd be interesting. It'd be a good test for these young safeties. I know that. It'd be baptism by fire in many ways for them going to Morgantown because they're going to see both Smith and Woods are going to see Morgan and Woods are going to see a lot of time, I would imagine.
Yeah, along with Chris Miller probably and for Kedrick. And so, yeah, they're going to – all four of them are going to have to play well because they're going to try to take the top off the defense. But definitely will be curious to see that matchup. And, you know, maybe if the defensive line can have a good week, that would be great.
That would be nice.
Iowa State had 7 sacks last week against or 2 weekends ago, I guess, against West Virginia. And they were able to get pressure from all levels and off blitzes and just off 4-man rushes, getting coverage sacks. So I think B.J. Thompson is going to be a guy to watch in this game. James Lynch, Ira Lewis as well. But I think B.J. really could have a factor in this football game. They're going to need him to because, you know, if the coverage is good and they just need someone to get in the backfield, I think he could be a guy that could potentially do that.
There's a way to get into the backfield a la Iowa State. Can these young guys do that? I think James Lynch will probably have a sack at some point. But, yeah, good opportunity because I feel like they're going to definitely be keying on him for a B.J. Thompson. Wish Deontay Williams was available in this situation, but obviously he's out for the rest of the year. I wonder if they get any other guys in the mix that we haven't seen yet. You know, I don't think if you were to suddenly play Josh Landry that he's going to come and have an impact in this game or anything like that, but can you just get some other kind of consistent pass rush? I wonder if Blake Lynch would be a pretty good candidate for that, although they do love to throw around, so he might not be really all that much available to be in the backfield.
I could see them bringing some blitzes. I definitely could. I could see
I don't
them
fear their run game all
no,
that much. So
lot.
it's all about the passing game and rattling Greer because otherwise he sits back there like so many have against Baylor. He is going to pick them apart. No matter what corner or safety or whoever is out there, he's elite. He's a Heisman contender for a reason, and he loves to throw the football.
Yeah, and you have to take your shots, and you got to pick your spots, and that's what Kansas did. Kansas picked their spots to bring blitzes. And then when they had 3rd and long, they dropped 8. And we saw Baylor do that against Texas as well. They would drop 8 with really no fear of doing that. And I think you could get away with that at times against West Virginia as well. But you have to get them in 3rd and longs. You can't let them be in 3rd and 4, not getting any sacks, and then just allowing him to sit there and pick you apart. So it'll be key if Baylor can get a little bit of pressure on Will Greer, maybe rattle him a little bit, possibly force a turnover or two, which would be really nice for this defense. But yeah, there's a lot of guys to watch in this game because the defense is going to be stressed. They're going to be put under a lot of stress, and they're going to have to come out and make some plays. That's it. We've talked about it all year.
Yeah, it's not a great matchup for them. Just their ability to give up big plays, West Virginia's ability to score on big plays. Other than that, you know, kind of see here and there. Baylor's offense versus their defense. I feel like Baylor's going to be able to move the football a bit, but can they punch it in the end zone? I mean, it's really as simple as that. It typically always comes down to the same things. Turnovers. Can you get them? Can you stop them? West Virginia will get some turnovers on you now. Charlie Brewer's going to have to be very smart with the football. He can't have any like lazy throw like he had against Texas that results in a pick down the sideline that, you know, leads to points right before the half. That cannot happen in this game, or that's going to be what dooms you early on. He's going to have to play a very clean, smart game and not turn the football over. But I want to go ahead and get into some recruiting talk and then into some questions. It's kind of us riffing on West Virginia coming up on Thursday night. Various scattered thoughts on that. But it was also a big weekend because of the open week with recruiting. The coaches were all out on the trail. What can you tell us? Obviously, a lot of new offers are out there, but what's kind of the synopsis of or the summary of what went on over the last few days on the recruiting trail?
A ton of out-of-state offers. An absolute ton. Florida, Georgia were both hit with a bunch of offers. And, you know, one high school in Georgia, Grayson High School, there were, I believe, 7 offers at that high school. And so they were kind of going around to different places, saw some really good players, and went ahead and offered them. And there were, I believe, 6 2019 guys offered. Actually, maybe 7. And and four JUCOs as well. And so they're
JUCOs.
They're trying to go the JUCO route, and they all have something in common. You know what that one thing is they have in common? Those JUCOs?
They play football.
They do play football, but they also all rush the passer.
Oh, imagine that.
Yeah, and it's clear that they feel like there is a need.
There is a definite deficiency in the rushing the passer area for this football team.
Yes, there for sure is, and we're seeing it with their offers. They're going out. They're trying to get one of those premier JUCO pass rushers to come and be a, you know, impact immediately. And so that was one of the interesting things. You know, they don't love taking JUCOs. They've mentioned that, mm-hmm. That it's not, they don't want to build a program off JUCOs, but they're going to bring in, you know, one or two if they feel like they can really help the team next year, or, you know, the year after they get them. And so they want to make sure they're used, and they're definitely looking at some JUCO guys. And, you know, it was just really interesting to see all the out-of-state offers that they were throwing out, and we know that this staff loves to recruit all over the place,
yeah,
all over the country. They're not just going to sit in Texas and only take Texas kids.
Well, I think Evan Cooper was on the ground in less than 24 hours on the East Coast already extending Florida offers out there to guys who are like 20, 21 kids. And saw a couple. There was a couple 2019s thrown out there, weren't there?
There were, yeah. There were a bunch of them.
Yeah.
There were a bunch of them, you know, and they were kind of just all around the place. I mean, there were two 2019 kids from Georgia, both defensive linemen, Tworn Seals from Cedar Grove High School, and then Isaiah Howard from Grayson High School. And Isaiah Howard is actually a guy that we did a featured piece on today, actually. We released it today, Colt and I did, and great kid, absolutely a great kid. And Baylor was his first offer, and this is a guy that I think is going to get a ton of offers moving forward. He's 6'4", 285 pounds, defensive tackle, really kind of the mold of a Alabama-type prospect with his size. And you just sit back and look, and he only has one offer, but he's got interest from Clemson and Texas. And, you know, a lot of big schools are going to start coming after him and looking at him. And so it's going to be interesting to see if Baylor can – find a way to get him on campus and possibly commit. He said he'll probably take a visit in early December, and he's definitely thinking about, you know, signing early. And so if he signs early, that gives Baylor a good shot. If he waits till February, that's when you start letting, you know, the big programs get in even more and get in there quicker. And so I'm going to be watching his recruitment really closely, because I think he could really help Baylor on the defensive front. And, you know, I'm just looking at it and I'm thinking, okay, so say they bring this kid in. Then they got TJ Franklin, who's 6'6".
Boy, the tune's changed on him, hasn't it?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's changed really quick. And, you know, if you didn't see the potential at first, then I don't know that you can just kind of claim that now, you know, you found him. But that's just how I feel about it. You know, you saw his potential and what he could be, and now he's finally – turning the corner a little bit, starting to make more plays and things like that. So definitely nice to see that from him. And Harrison White is another that a lot of people questioned a whole lot based on his junior film that was so limited because he was injured. Comes out this year and has looked awesome. Absolutely has looked awesome. And so, you know, you add that. So now you got three guys that are 6'4" or bigger on your defensive front, and you're looking pretty good in the middle of that defensive line. And I mean, you got James Lynch still, who's only a sophomore.
Got 2 years left, yeah.
Yeah, and so, and, you know, BJ Thompson on the outside, who's only a sophomore. So a lot of positives going on the defensive front. But, yeah, so Isaiah Howard's one to really pay attention to. I don't know if he'll end up going to Baylor. You never know on that. Recruiting is such a it fluctuates a ton. But he is a guy that Baylor has made a priority and are really, really trying to land in this 2019 recruiting class. And so that was an interesting offer that I saw, and there's kind of been some traction from it. There was another 2019 offer. I mean, there were a few more, but another one that was really interesting to me was Jaden Gragg, and he's out of Eagle High School in Florida, and he's currently committed to Bowling Green. And he's a kid that can play receiver or cornerback. I think they're recruiting him for defense. And he really looks like a player. And I don't know why he's gotten lost, but in Florida, it's easy for that to happen, just like it is in Texas. And so he's one that I think Baylor is also going to make a priority. And, you know, they're starting to find ways that they may be able to close this class without taking some of the names that we thought they were going to take. And, you know, due to people trying, you know, waiting a little bit longer, you know, Baylor's starting to see some senior film, and they're offering guys that they see flashes of on their film, and that they can go see in person. And it looks like they're trying to find some other needs, other than just going after what we originally thought they were. And it looks like cornerback could be another one of those needs, along with the defense front.
I could see that at corner, yeah, especially. I mean, you got some young safeties. Still think you probably need a little more help back there, but the corners are developing nicely. But, man, if you're going to have Harrison Hand missing a ton of time and Graylin Arnold, I mean, you can't rely on him now at this point. I mean, he's got 2 years in a row of missing multiple games. You're going to need some backup services. Tejada's promising, but you're going to need more than those guys. You know, Bonds is not a corner now. He's a safety, but he's going to be gone after this year. So, kind of thin in a way at that position, or just extremely young, one or the other.
Yeah, because, you know, Kalen Barnes has looked good, yeah, but he's young.
But he's also so hurt young. Now.
Yeah,
so
he's hurt now.
He's
yeah.
out. And, oh, man, I've completely forgot about him. He would have been ideal for this game on Thursday. That's a big blow.
Yeah, it is. It is, but I think Tejada will do just fine. He's shown kind of similar. Don't they look kind of similar to me as far as how they play? I know Kalen has elite speed, but Tejada's pretty
fast. Not far behind speed-wise, but it would just be nice to have two of those types of players going up against this West Virginia receiving corps.
For sure to run with them. So, yeah, Jaden Gregg is one, and Brandon White is a guy that, you know, they're bringing in as a receiver. He's a Baylor commit already from Tascosa, and I think he could play cornerback as well. But, yeah, you're exactly right. You can never have, you know, too many.
And this league, I mean, look at what Texas is doing in recruiting. They're getting like 17 DBs a class, and just we'll figure it out. And, you know, you get so many of them and so many quality that there may be a, you know, a guy that eventually transfers or something along those lines, but you're going to be loaded for bear. And it seems to me that the team that Texas kind of has right now, in a way, defensively, is what they're trying to build up now. It's taller, bigger defensive backs. You know, 6 foot plus, if at all possible, 185, you know, 200, whatever. And, you know, Tom Herman kind of walked into a situation where is almost already equipped with some of those guys, but has added a ton of them. And Baylor's just trying to, you know, put the pieces together to get that same sort of setup, I think. And obviously, you know, defensive line-wise, trying to get bigger and stronger up there as well. It's just it's a process. You can't change it overnight. To overuse that term, it's a process, but it really truly is, and just interesting to see kind of where they're going in that direction.
Yeah, it definitely is, and this was an exciting week. There were a ton of offers that were put out, and this staff continues to put in a lot of work. And
were you all surprised by a lack of, like, how many offers were around the state of Texas, or was it mostly just national recruiting?
A lot of the offers were out of state, but there was one, Calvin Wiggins, and he was offered. He's from.
Mind you, I don't care where they're from.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious about that because it seems like a lot of the time was taken to make sure and head out of state while you have this extra time. And maybe during the playoffs is when you see more of that Texas flavor as far as maybe any late offers, guy emerging in the playoffs or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they spend so much time in Texas that it's almost like they'd be doing a disservice to themselves by not going, at least seeing what is out there. And, you know, slashing these offers at a school is what it looked like they did. You know, they never went to a school, and it was just
now all of
one
them
offer.
Talking about. We all got an offer from Baylor. We all play together.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was interesting. But they did put out a Texas offer, and it's a kid they really want, and it's a Calvin Wiggins out of Byron Nelson Trophy Club, which
home
is
of Bowen. Brandon Bowen.
Brandon Bowen. And so, he's 6'4", 195, had great senior film, midseason film, and Baylor offered him. And he's a kid that I believe will take a visit at some point, maybe for the TCU game possibly. And he went to Cal last weekend, went on a visit there. He's a good player, and he's one that Baylor wants. And I don't want to say that he is a replacement for Langston Anderson, but I think it's one of those where they want another receiver, and you know, they may not wait. And so that's just kind of how it is. And that's really unfortunate because I really like Langston Anderson as a prospect. I think he's going to be a really good player. But He seems to be taking a little longer than I was expecting, and now he's released that he's, you know, December 19th is when he's making his decision. Should be releasing a top four really soon. I expect Baylor to be in that. But, you know, if you want to wait that long, Baylor has to make sure they get everything they need in the class. And so maybe they would take Calvin and still take Langston too. But don't know for sure on that. So still waiting on Langston. And then the other one is Brant Banks, who we haven't heard a lot from recently.
Yeah.
And so those are the two guys that are kind of still lingering after King DeRue committed to Purdue and Peyton Powell committed to Texas today. So
yeah.
That's pretty much all the lingering guys that have really, their names been mentioned a ton that haven't made a decision yet.
And how would DeRue not do that after last weekend? I mean, my gosh, that was the most insane game just for that Purdue crowd. The most crazy Purdue game I've ever seen as far as just beating the mess out of Ohio State. I don't blame him, and he'll be a great fit there. Peyton Powell, he kind of saw the writing on the wall once Texas offered there. So he'll just be whatever he ends up being there. It's one of those offers, as I read it, of just, we'll figure it out when you get here kind of a thing. Defense maybe, offense maybe, we'll see for him and UT.
That's what I see as well.
All right, let's get into some questions here. There's a little bit of a recruiting talk for you. And thanks to everybody who sent in questions this week. We'll start off with Dilly Dilly, 1845, not Baylor-related, but what are your chances given the Tigers and LSU versus Bama? What are the playoff implications if LSU manages to win? I think they've got a shot. I don't think they're going to win the game. I think it'll be relatively low scoring. I think it's going to be a defensive slugfest, not 6-0 or anything like that. Not the bore fest that we've also seen from these two teams when they were inept offensively for the most part and the defense is dominated. But I do expect this to be a really fun defensive game. The matchup I'm most intrigued by is LSU's defense versus Tua and his skill guys. I think that's going to be fascinating to watch, but I do expect Bama to win. I think they're the best team in the country right now. I think they've got the best quarterback that Saban's had, just talent-wise, in his tenure at Alabama. And Joe Burrow will be interesting to watch against that Alabama defense. But I'm picking the Tide. I think, though, it's going to be a raucous game. It's going to be crazy atmosphere. And should be close for majority of the way, but the Tide eventually pull away. And implication-wise, I mean, it depends on the final result. Does LSU or Alabama lose by 17-plus? I doubt it. Or do they lose on a last-second field goal? That will say a lot. We know that being in the SEC and being two brand names, they'll get a boost with a loss depending on how they make it look. So if LSU loses... you know, how did they lose? And yeah, they'll still be in the mix. If their loss is just to Alabama, then
Florida.
Well, in Florida earlier, yeah. But I mean, I think everybody's kind of just moved past that at this point. Two losses would be hard, but I don't know. They'll drop, but they'd still be in the conversation, I would think, depending on the style in which they fall.
Yeah. I'm giving LSU, I put a number, I put 35% chance. That's just kind of a ballpark. I think that, I don't know that Tua is 100% running the ball right now.
He's a little banged up.
A little banged up. And so him not being able to run around as much against a defense that their pass defense is unbelievably good. And I'm very curious to see if Tua is able to throw against LSU because no one's really been able to. Most of the times where they've gotten in trouble is through the run game. And that's really the only thing you can really take advantage of against them. And I know Bama's going to be able to run the ball at times, but raucous crowd, I believe it's in Baton Rouge. I think LSU definitely have a chance.
Sure.
I definitely think they do. And I think that they can – I think they'll keep this to a one-score game. I don't know if they're going to win or not. I would probably pick Bama. They're the best team, so it's hard not to pick them. But – they'll give themselves a chance. As far as playoff implications go, I do think that if LSU loses this game, I think they're out. I don't see any way that a two-loss team that doesn't make the SEC championship could get in. That would baffle me. At 10-2, I would be extremely shocked if that happened. Now, if Bama loses and Bama only has one loss, and say they don't make it to the SEC championship, say LSU wins out.
I don't think being in the championship game matters all that much, though. I mean, if you break it down, and let's say there's, you know, maybe Texas isn't the best example, but I think a two-loss LSU who loses a close game to Alabama, and Florida's a highly ranked team. I mean, Florida's a team that people respect, yeah. You know, that is pretty good this year. I think they could be given the benefit of the doubt over a two-loss Oklahoma or a two-loss Texas or a two-loss whoever else. I mean, it all depends so much on what everybody else does.
That is true. Yeah, that of course that's true. My thing is I would most years there hasn't been a two-loss there not most years every year there hasn't been a two-loss team, which implies to me that, you know, Clemson, if they lose one game and win out and win the conference, they're probably getting in.
Sure.
You know, OU wins out, only has one loss, they're for sure getting in. Notre Dame doesn't lose, they're getting in. You know, I think that there's a lot of teams that would jump them a little bit. And then you also have to remember that, you know, the winner of this game still would have to play in the SEC championship and beat Georgia. Probably mm-hmm. Georgia, unless Florida or someone else makes Florida. It, which could happen.
Yeah.
Definitely could happen. I just think, you know, and then you look at
it'd
the
be
Big
hard.
Ten.
I mean, yeah. It'd be very hard if they lose this game. I mean, it's probably a very long shot, but we still got 5 weeks left in the season. So, I mean, who knows what can happen?
Yeah. My thought is if Bama were to lose this game,
they still have a shot.
They definitely still have a shot. Yeah. And say they get left out of the SEC championship, I still think they would need some things to go right, because they're not getting in over Clemson if they win out. They're not getting in if OU wins out. They're not getting in if Notre Dame wins out or one of those Big Ten schools. I don't believe. I believe if Ohio State wins out, beats Michigan at the end of the year, and then wins the Big Ten championship, and they're 12-1, I think they should and would get in over Bama. Last year didn't happen because they had two losses, of course. But
I mean, OU and Texas might have to play each other again. And you could always have one of those teams still lose a game before that even occurs. So then you could have like two losses apiece for the Big 12 teams. Michigan and Ohio State still have to play each other. You know, LSU, Bama obviously is going to say a lot about kind of the trajectory of the West. But, you know, Alabama's still going to – you never know in the Iron Bowl. I mean, there's so many things that could happen here. UCS, they don't want them in there.
No.
Yeah, they don't want them in there. Notre Dame, I think, is probably going to go unbeaten, and they don't have to worry about a conference championship game. So they seem like about as close to a lock as you can probably get at this point.
And Clemson, with that schedule.
Clemson does as well. But, yeah, Georgia, LSU, I mean, I don't trust Michigan to run the table the rest of the way.
Ohio State.
Not with what I saw on Saturday night. They can't run the football, man. They can't run the football, and they're not going to be able to run the football against Michigan. Are you kidding me? They can't run against Purdue. They're not running against Michigan. But, yeah, let's just say LSU loses. Stock falls pretty significantly, but a lot of it will matter on style, and they'll still have a better chance than most teams that are out there, because I think there's still going to be a few teams beating up on one another before it's all said and done, and we are going to see more upsets before all is said and
done. Yeah, we for sure will, and I think one other thing that I just want to mention is Bama usually has those marquee wins, and this year they don't. Their right. best win is that A&M game in Tuscaloosa if they lose to LSU. Other than that, their next best win, based on the schedule, is probably going to be Auburn, who is not very good this year, as we've come to find out. But another question from Dilly Dilly. He asked me earlier this week about the college football playoff. Mm-hmm. And if I were to make any changes, what would those changes be? So I thought we could go ahead and answer that for him. I didn't want to type about it. I decided we might as well discuss it. What do you think the college football playoff should be? And do you think there should be a change in criteria or anything like that to go along with it, or do you like it the way it is?
It should be 8 teams, all the conference champs, the Power 5, and 3 wild card. Or you could even do – I mean, Notre Dame would count as a wild card, I guess the independent there. But, yeah, that's what I would do. Power 5 champs, 3 wild cards, because you could have 2 SEC teams, 2 Big 12 teams, whatever, and then your UCF. I think that some serious consideration should be given to a non-Power 5, that there should be – if there's an unbeaten, I think to leave them out of like a top 8 would be almost impossible to do. So that's how I would do it.
Yeah, and I think a top 8 would be fine. I would be okay with that. Even if you get rid of one of those cupcake games in the schedule, I'd be fine with that too. I would also be cool with 6, because 6 you get your Power 5 and then you get your one at large team. And for me, that at large team would pretty much every year be a Group of 5 team or Notre Dame. essentially is what it would be. But at least it would give UCF a chance, or give someone a chance.
But I don't want a team getting a bye based on the fact that they're ranked by people, number one or number two. You know what I mean?
Like, I could see
that. So because Stuart Mandel or whoever, I kind of just flip my nose at all college football writers after the last couple years anyways. Not that they don't know what they're talking about, but I see the biases. I see how they're not subjective about a lot of things, and I see how they ride jocks hard, depending on whoever's hot at the time or whoever coach has the most, sway over them. And I just use that random name. There's a lot of those guys out there. I don't think you give Bama a first-round bye and make everybody else play an extra game.
Yeah, and I could see where yeah. I definitely see where you're coming from with that. Point blank period is they made a system with four spots and there's five conferences.
No, that never made any sense.
Doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And you can swing it however you want. That makes no sense. Every Power Five conference champion should get in. I don't care if you went 9-3. You should get in if you won your conference. And that's the way I kind of feel about it. And my thing is, and I'm right there with you, when people start saying, Oh, the eye test. Oh, well, when we picked Ohio State to get in, look, they won. It doesn't matter. You could put anyone in and maybe they would win. They have a shot at winning. Bama last year, like, yes, they had a shot at winning, but you can argue whether they deserve to get in because your answer when you were asked the question, why'd they get in, you said the eye test.
Oh, Jeff Long's full of it, and that playoff committee and their reasoning remains full of it. That every week it was something different. It was just a moving target to get what they ultimately wanted, which they ultimately got, and then they just so happened in year number one to get the payoff that they wanted.
Yep.
So that's all there really was
exactly.
to it. One more from Dilly Dilly. How do you think the Baylor-TCU rivalry compared to 2014 when both were top 10, even though both teams have temporarily sunk to mediocrity? I'm excited to see the matchup now that both have comparable talent again. I don't think it'll be anywhere close to 2014. There's not enough on the line for it. Now it's just simply a rivalry and two teams that don't like each other but not playing for really anything other than bragging rights. I think it'll remain heated amongst the two fan bases, but all that outside attention that it was receiving from said writers or from TV networks is not going to be there until they're both hovering around the top 10 again. So that outside heat won't be there. The rivalry itself, though, will probably be as heated as ever because they are somewhat on par. And I think TCU feels like they've got a leg up just based on the fact that they're not coming out of scandal and they want to remain that way. And Baylor's, can get right back in the mix of things with a win over a TCU. So, hate-filled, but not heated like it was in 2014.
Yeah, not the same level of what's on the line.
Great so, for fans in Fort Worth in Waco, but not outside of it.
Yeah, just not the same for what's on the line in this game. But I would also say, I think that one is going to be very important to Baylor. I know there's a lot of season left for TCU to try to get back, but from what I've seen, it looks like it may be a snowball year for TCU, kind of like 2016 was for Baylor. I know it's a different circumstance, but it just appears that way for TCU that they may struggle down the line, and I could see it happening. Thanks for the questions, Dilly Dilly. Abby Bear, why wouldn't we use Braylon Taylor for four games this season as a jump ball red zone weapon? I mean, I guess if he's shown the ability to do that in practice.
I don't think it's automatic that that's who he is just yet.
Yeah, I mean, it may take time. He's only a freshman, but if he was doing that, they would definitely use him.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, with all these guys that haven't played yet, these freshmen, I mean, I don't know who's dealing with bumps and bruises or who's maybe got a bad shoulder right now. We don't get any injury updates on guys that aren't playing. I don't think it's out of the question that we're not going to see him for four games this season. I just think that, at this point in time, they're rolling with what they've got, and maybe they wanted to get him a little extra time to come off an injury, or maybe they just wanted to get him a little extra practice time, or maybe they wanted to put a little bit more weight on him. But that doesn't mean we're not going to see him at all this year. Will we for sure? I don't know. But why wouldn't we? There could be a variety of reasons for that. We're going to see plenty of Braylon Taylor, I feel like, over the years. There's nothing I've heard that's like a negative or anything like that. So maybe that is something we see. But also, you got to be comfortable in what you're doing and knowing what you're doing. And who knows if he's all the way up to task on that just yet. Who knows what kind of chemistry he has with Charlie Brewer, if he has any at this point. I mean, Christoph Henley is basically the only tight end that we've seen. They've kind of been holding back on Ben Sims, on Braylon Taylor, on
even Tyler Henderson.
Tyler Henderson.
Bit, yeah.
So I mean, it's been the Christoph Henley show, so that could apply to the other two as well, and there probably is a method behind that. I would imagine we're going to see a couple of those guys, though, here in this last five-week stretch. It's just what game are they not going to play in so that they maintain their red shirt?
Yeah, they definitely want to redshirt them. So however they are going to use them, if they even use them, they're going to keep their red shirt. So don't expect to see a heavy dose of them for, you know, more than four games.
And I kind of look at using Braylon Taylor just out of nowhere as a true freshman as like the Cowboys trying to use Rico right now. That's what it, you know, that's kind of what it is, though. That's what it made me think of just now. So that's, everybody thinks you just go and jump ball in the end zone, it's going to be touchdowns. Not that that's what you're saying, but there's so much more to it. And there's a reason why, it's not that the Cowboys coaches are stupid. It's that Rico is very one-dimensional at the moment, and yes, the Cowboys coaches are also somewhat stupid.
And I'm not saying that it's, you know, for sure like this, but I'm just thinking, you know, if you're going to throw a jump ball, why wouldn't you throw it to Denzel Mims or Jalen Hurd?
Yeah,
that's my only thing, you know, because then you're taking them out of the game and throwing it.
And how do you,
freshman,
how do you want him to use his four games?
Yeah.
Do you want to have him in there just for a couple of jump balls on the off chance that he catches it? Because if he's not ready to block anybody yet, or he's not big enough and sturdy enough just yet to know what he's doing, or be physical enough, then you're just wasting his redshirt possibilities, basically. So that's various reasons why we probably haven't seen that just yet. SA Baylor fan, what makes Morgantown such a difficult place to play? Why is it even harder on a Thursday night?
For me, it is the travel and the fact that it is probably going to be the coldest place they play, except for maybe Ames. Ames maybe could reach that level because it's a little later in the year, but it's very cold. Their crowd is crazy. It always has been.
Ames is also very flat, so it'd definitely be a little chillier, I would imagine, by the time that rolls around.
For sure, but the travel and everything like that definitely takes a toll on you. I feel like, and the crowd's crazy, and I mean, they're usually a pretty good team. Like they have been, they've provided scares, and you know, Baylor's never won there. That's another factor. They've never won in Morgantown.
And there's a few teams who've only won there like one time in their multiple trips there. I think it's just I think geography kind of screws with people a little bit for those who are maybe traveling from Texas. All of a sudden they're in the mountains and it's the East Coast, and it's wildly different than what you're kind of accustomed to. It's a different kind of fan out there. I mean, they are rowdy and liquored up and just without any mercy whatsoever. And it is jam-packed and it is loud and it is crazy and Country Roads is hitting. And it's just a different scene typical than as opposed to going to like Eamon Carter, you know, even at its best, or DKR even at its best. Okay, that's 100,000 people and it's loud, but there's nothing that unique about it. It's just a big stadium, whereas in West Virginia, a lot of things are different, from the weather to the scenery to the fact that depending on when you go in there, you may be on the day of the game driving, you know, a good ways to get from where you're actually staying as opposed to, or to get to Morgantown. You're not just staying in Morgantown. I know, was it like Pittsburgh? A lot of teams will stay there and then drive in that day of. And, yeah, the weather gets involved like it could on Thursday night. But yeah, I mean, mostly it's rowdy fans, and it's just different. Is the best way to put it.
Yeah, a nighttime game, regardless if it's Thursday or Saturday, it's prime time, so the fans are definitely going to show up and be there, loud and ready to, you know, cheer on the Mountaineers. So it's definitely not going to be an easy one for anyone that goes in there for a nighttime game. But thanks for the question, SA Baylor fan. AF Blue 82, Coach Rhule said in his presser that every week a couple more guys figure it out. We saw Blake figure it out against Texas, Blake Lynch. So my question is, who is your one figured-out guy that puts it together against West Virginia?
You had somebody in mind, right?
I had two guys in mind.
Okay, go for it.
One on the offensive side, which is Chris Platt. I think this is a game that really he has a chance to provide a huge impact and maybe create an explosive play for this offense. I think he might be able to do that this week, and I would love to see it for him to get back on track. On the defense, I think Ira Lewis is a guy that he's been solid this year but hasn't taken a huge leap like I think we all thought he would as far as, you know, getting in the backfield and making plays. I think he might be able to this week against an offensive line that really hasn't been that great the past couple weeks. So those are my two guys. What about you?
I'm having a really hard time with this question because I feel like we've seen most of the impact guys that we're going to see, and I feel like everybody's kind of hit at one point. I mean, Chris Platt's a good one, but I also wonder, too, how much does he need to figure out and more so just play? But you're right. There must be something that's holding him back because he's not had the type of senior year that we expected for whatever reason. Some of it his own doing, drops. You know, also I feel kind of weird about naming like Tejada as like figuring out because I think he's kind of figured it out already. Yeah.
He has figured it out. Yeah, though. He's getting on the field.
Yeah,
and
that's what
good.
I mean. Yeah. So I'm trying to think of somebody that just appears. I think Blake was just so out there on an island by his own, sort of lost at times that it's kind of hard to compare him to anybody else being in that situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know what? Man, do I really want to go at this or not?
Go at it. Go at it.
I don't know if I have full confidence in this, but I'm going to go with either Giancarlo or Jake Frumorgan as figuring it out because they've gotten a lot of reps now at this point, and, you know, it's all about just needing more reps. So I'm going to go with one of the O-linemen because all the rest of the guys have played a ton or they haven't played enough to have time to figure it out. So I'm going to go with, like, maybe Giancarlo here.
Basically the left side of the O-line.
Yeah.
Malin.
The whole
Morgan,
left side.
Valentine, yeah.
The whole left side of the line is going to figure it out this week.
Okay, good. And they're all healthy.
Yeah.
They're all finally healthy.
As far as
so,
we know.
Yeah. Could definitely
they're as healthy
it.
As they're going to be the rest of the way. That's
yeah.
for sure.
And against a good matchup.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could definitely
and
see
this would
that.
Be a huge week for them to get it all together. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then just hope for next week. But that's just one that pops to mind for me. Let's see. Thank you, AF Blue. You also continued on. Of all the new 2019 offers that went out this past week, which player do you like the most? Which one is likeliest to end up in this class?
So the one that I like the most, and I've talked about him. I talked about him during the recruiting segment today, and that's Isaiah Howard. That defensive tackle, I don't think you find many guys his size with his level of potential in my mind. Just, I mean, it's limited film, but I really liked his film and like what I saw from him. I think he's a guy that's going to continue to explode as far as getting offers, and his ranking will definitely move up. He's defensive tackle out of Grayson High School. The guy that is most likely to end up a Bear is Dorian Hewitt, I think. And he's a safety from North Shore High School. You know, North Shore is a great football program. They're looking really good this year. And he's a safety for them. And I really like his game. I think he could be a pretty good player for the Bears. And he's a true safety, which is something they don't have in this class. They have a lot of guys that are kind of in between linebacker and safety. And they don't really know what they're going to do with all of them yet. But Hewitt looks like a for sure safety and kind of reminds me of Chris Miller a little bit as far as the way he plays. And so I think he'd be a welcome addition to the class, and he's one I'm very curious about. He's currently committed to Syracuse. So, you know, saying he's the likeliest is kind of crazy because he's committed somewhere else. But he got a Baylor offer, and I think he'll take a visit, and I think Baylor will have a good shot at getting him.
Okay, very good. Nate Smith, and then you could take the next one. Hey, guys, two questions. Number one, most important guy on each side of the ball that needs to show out against West Virginia in order to have a chance at stealing a tough road victory.
So the first one on the offensive side is Jamichael Hasty. He has got to show up. They got to get to 150 yards rushing in this football game, period.
Run and straight ahead.
Run straight ahead. Don't outcut yourself. You know, make the plays, just get upfield, get yourself a few yards, and live to run another down. When the big plays are there, take them, but this team needs to stay ahead of the chains. So instead of losing 2 yards, gain 2 yards and survive another down. And that's what I would say with him, but he's going to have to play well. He really is. They need him to play well in this football game and get some movement. On the defensive side, it's a guy I mentioned, B.J. Thompson. This West Virginia offensive line has not done an amazing job protecting Will Greer, especially last week. And I think BJ Thompson is a guy that, this defensive line really needs to step up and win his one-on-one matchup, this week against West Virginia.
I'm going to go with some obvious guys, but I think that if they have big games, then it bodes well. James Lynch on defense and Denzel Mims on offense. If both those guys have good games, I feel pretty good about the direction they're going. I'd like to see Denzel bounce back after what was a very not great fourth quarter non-showing against Texas. It felt like he was really getting on track, and then that happened. I understand injuries happen, but think it's a big game for, you know, Denzel Mims to go and show out and pick up where he left off against Oklahoma and even early in that Texas game before he got injured. I mean, he was on a good run, and then that fourth quarter just didn't happen when they needed him the most. So be nice for him to get back on track, and if he does, and that opens up Jalen Hurd, that opens up Chris Platt, that opens up the running game. So that would be important for me. And then James Lynch is your best player on defense, and it's not even close. And if he get in the backfield and cause some havoc on Will Greer, then I think that could bode well for this defense as well.
Definitely. So second question, I felt in the Kansas State game that Tressan Ebner really showed us his potential. Craig, you've been spot on for a while about him. My question is, why so many limited touches against UT?
I don't know. I don't know why he had so limited. I think he just couldn't run the football. Was a big part of it. So it was kind of wasted touches, even if he got touches, is probably the majority of it. I think Tressan's got all the upside in the world. Like I said, I've kind of attached myself to him in a way like the last year and a half. But, you know, I think it was just what the defense was showing more so than anything else.
Yeah, he also asked, in your opinion, what prevents him from being more involved in our offensive scheme? He also said, thanks, guys, as always. Great work each week. Well, thank you for that, Nate Smith. We know you've been a listener every week.
Well, so, a listener. Thank you, Nate.
But what do you think? What do you think about that? Do you think it's something to do with the scheme?
I think they can't run the football.
Yeah, like that's what I think, too.
They can't run the football. So if you could, then that opens up all sorts of other things. But for me, any problems offensively always go back to the fact that you cannot run the football, and that goes to your offensive line, which is why Charlie's getting knocked around, which is why it's hard to get a short yardage in any situation, and Jalen Hurts had to be used in there because ideally you wouldn't have to use him on the goal line. You could use Tressan Ebner or Jamichael Hasty. It's not that those guys can't get there. It's just that they're not good enough right now to find the tiny sliver that Jalen Hurd can fit himself through. They don't have the vision like he has. If you had push up front, then you could run Jamichael on second down and goal and feel pretty comfortable. But right now you can't in any way, shape, or form. So it all goes back to really the same thing for me. And if you could open up more holes, I think you'd see more Tressan Ebner. I think we'd see more John Lovett. But you're just kind of playing with the cards you're dealt. And you know, until that O-line gets shored up and they can get a solid running game, I think we're going to wonder why we don't see more of this guy or more of that guy more often. And plus, you know, there's also other guys that need carries too. So I don't know that we'll ever see Tressan getting 25 carries in a game. It's never going to be a one-back system, I don't feel like. So anyway, that's my thoughts on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree. I think there's just some, you know, if you can't run the ball, it doesn't matter who you put back there. I know Hasty has an ability to kind of make people miss probably better than the other ones do. He does dance a little bit too much. But
so does John Lovett.
Yes, but he does have the ability to make people miss, and you'll see it occasionally, yeah. But then you'll also see him run backwards.
John Lovett really doesn't, though. John Lovett runs to the side and then just gets tracked down, and that drives me nuts, too.
Yeah, that can definitely – yeah, that's definitely a problem. Marlon. There are several freshmen who haven't played in a game yet. How do you think Rule will use these guys with a few games left? And any chance we see Bohannon get any action at QB? Thanks, guys. Well, the Bohannon one first. I hope he gets to see some action, because if he gets some action, that means that Baylor is routing somebody. Because if not, I don't see him playing much unless it is just... See, I know we've talked about, oh, maybe he gets snaps in at the goal line to run the ball in. But I think to myself, is he really going to be better than what Jalen Hurd has done? You know, running the ball at the goal line, Hurd has been fantastic at it. I don't know that you would want to take the ball out of his hands. I'd love to see Bohannon get some reps, but I think the opportunity for that was lost early in the year.
Yeah.
I just would find that very difficult to happen. As far as...
You're not going to start playing Bohannon over McClendon at this point. It's just not cool to do. You can wait on Gary. And Jalen came here for this 1 year. Let him get whatever second team reps there are, you know. And then it would have been ideal to see Gary, but you know, you're not seeing right now Cameron Rising playing for Texas. You saw like a little Tanner Mordecai. That's because Oklahoma was just waylaying people early on in the year, but we haven't seen him at all lately. So I mean, yeah, you can play these guys four games, but it doesn't mean you have to play these guys in four games or play them at all. And maybe they don't want to. Maybe they don't want them out there just yet. Maybe they want to have you know, a full, real, true red shirt year of not seeing any game action, because Charlie's the dude. There's no doubt about that. So you know, why even risk putting him out there if he's not quite ready?
Yeah, and I'm sorry I'm sidetracking, but you talked about, you know, Charlie is the guy. There was an interesting comment at the press conference. I forgot who said it, but it was talking about, I think it was Blackmar, talking about Charlie taking hits and if he took it personally. And he said, you know, this is a guy doing everything right. This is a guy, you know, putting in the time, putting in the work to make sure these things happen. I don't know any inside information, but I feel like there is a chance he could roll out in the number two against West Virginia.
Oh, yeah. I've been thinking about that for a few weeks.
But I really, when he was talking about him like that, it almost made me
I think if he doesn't, it's kind of, it's not like a big deal, but I mean, what more does a guy have to do to earn a single-digit jersey?
Exactly. I just thought that was interesting, and you talking about Charlie made me think of it. But there are several freshmen who haven't played in a game yet. How do you think Rule will use these guys with a few games left? I think there's probably only a few that maybe if they show, you know, maybe special teams like B.J. Hanspard or Mark Milton could get in there on special teams. Maybe Landry comes in and gets to get a few reps. Ben Sims maybe at tight end. But I don't see anyone having a significant role other than Gavin Holmes, who is not a freshman. I think Gavin Holmes could have a significant impact towards the end of this season in the last four games. But freshman-wise, I think the guys that are going to have a big impact have already pretty much played in four games.
That's my exact thoughts on it as well. I think we've seen all the studs, you know, that are ready to play right away or close enough. B.J. Hanspard had the little deal about 3 weeks ago or whatever where he wasn't expected. He's just going to redshirt or whatever, and then maybe see time later in the year. They basically pulled him out of the hotel or called him. He wasn't even at the hotel. Called him to come to the hotel, like, hey, we're going to need you to suit up because of injury. I forget who it was, but he ended up playing special teams that day. So he's already got one game at least under his belt. I had to look further at the participation chart to know for sure where everybody's lined up. But, I mean, we know who's been playing and who hasn't been. And for the guys who haven't been, they need to get bigger, faster, stronger, but maybe they see some special teams action. I do think we're going to see some Gavin Holmes, though, in this last four-game stretch.
Yeah, and I think he could be really important. I love Fleeks, and I love what he brings to the table. But, you know, we saw a spark from Gavin Holmes last year that really no one else could provide on last year's team. And I don't know if it's the same this year, but that's a guy that came on a little bit last year that I would love to see in that receiving group. So definitely a good question, Marlon. Thanks for that. A Workman 451. Am I crazy to have a good feeling about the West Virginia game?
No, I don't have a real negative feeling like I thought I might have heading into this. Again, said earlier, if you asked me like 3 weeks ago, I'd have said like, yeah, probably a tail kicking's on the way, but I don't feel that way. I almost feel silly like even previewing games now because it's so much about just what they do, just like their mindset. It's about what they do. Now, if they do everything perfectly, are they going to be a better team on every given Saturday? No, but they're going to at least give themselves a chance to win. I like kind of the attitude I sense coming out of that Texas game as far as this team bonding together even further. I think everybody's all in at this point that's going to be around here. Anybody who isn't is not around any longer. And so, I think you should have a good feeling about this game. I think it would be massively, massively disappointing to come off of the bye week and see them play poorly on Thursday night. I think that'd be not devastating, but it would be really disappointing because I think they've kind of shown the signs of a team that is getting better, and Rule's kind of known for his team's finishing the season. So I'm expecting a good effort, maybe not good enough to win the game, but I'm expecting a good effort and a good showing.
Yeah, I couldn't have said any better myself. I think they're going to come in and compete, and all signs point to that. So I think you should have a pretty good feeling about it. Crash with the last question. I kind of feel like we're playing with house money against West Virginia. If we play well and keep it competitive, great. If we pull off the upset, even better. But I won't be overly concerned if we take a step back from the performance we saw down in Austin. What are y'all's mindsets going into this game? If we take a pretty good beating, is that a major cause for concern in terms of how the rest of the season might play out? I do not think that them losing this game by a significant margin is a major cause for concern, because I think West Virginia is probably the best offensive team they have left on their schedule. So I would understand it, and it's a tough environment to play in. But one thing I will say, and I talked about earlier, is they're going to see a couple more offenses that run similar things. So I think run similar schemes. I'm just going to be it's basically the way that West Virginia scores, in my opinion. I don't want to see these huge, gashing, wide-open plays like we saw against OU or you know, a throw to Marquise Brown where he breaks one tackle and it's a touchdown. You know, they can't have that. I want to see that they've progressed from that. And that's kind of my big thing, because if you can't tackle against West Virginia and make plays and cover your assignments, you're not going to be able to against Tech or Oklahoma State, and you will get scored on. Whether you lose or not, don't know, but you will give up points. So I think my biggest takeaway will be how they handle this kind of offensive scheme they're going to see. But yes, I wouldn't say the season's over if they got blown out against a good team.
No, because I think every game's still winnable. Iowa State would be very concerning, but the others I don't really fear all that much. I don't fear Oklahoma State. I don't fear TCU right now. Who's the other one?
Tech.
I don't even fear them. I keep hearing how great their defense is. I don't think it's as great as it's being put out to be. I think it's better. I think it's good. It's fine. But I don't think it's like, oh, man, they're defensively dominant in any way, shape, or form. TCU seems like they're kind of falling apart at the seams right now with what all's going on and just the losing building up. Now Robinson's out. That might be a blessing in disguise, actually. But, I mean, I think every game's winnable, but this is one of the two, along with Iowa State, I'd say is the most unlikely of the five that are remaining. So getting beat pretty good. I mean, we saw one of the best Baylor teams ever get their butts kicked in Morgantown, and they ended up just fine, so I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Yeah, and one of the best TCU teams ever won on a game-winning field goal in Morgantown.
Yep.
So they are not a pushover at home. So, yeah, I wouldn't be too concerned about it. But that's it for the mailbag. Do you want to get into some pick 'em?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead and get into the Big 12 schedule.
Okay, so we'll start with the Saturday games. We'll get to Baylor last. But Texas Tech travels to Iowa State, a team that has absolutely had their number for the past few years. I remember a few years ago, Iowa State beat Tech 66-10 when they had Mahomes. So, interesting game. Two teams that seem to be trending in the right direction, though. What do you think about this one?
Going Cyclones all day long in this one. I think we're going to see that Tech, even with Alan Bowman back, we're going to see that offense slowed down a little bit. And, we got two young hotshot quarterbacks here. I like Brock Purdy in this game over Alan Bowman. There'll definitely be some scoring involved, but the best unit in the entire game is Iowa State's defense. So I'm going to go with them in Ames, too. Give me the Cyclones in this one.
Yeah, I think Iowa State just kind of got a game plan. They're going to use the same game plan they had last week against West Virginia and Will Grier. I think they'll frustrate Bowman. I actually think this is going to be blowout city. I think they'll beat them by three scores. Last time I picked that was West Virginia versus Tech. Tech was able to come back and keep it close, but I really like Iowa State in this game.
Tell you what, they better hope Alan Bowman stays healthy in this game, because if he were to get knocked out for whatever reason and Jet Duffy comes in there, then man alive, he will get torn to shreds, in my opinion. I just think that he's too inexperienced to be able to deal with this Iowa State defense right now.
Yeah, he was able to somehow win that TCU game, but that was more on TCU's mistakes than
it was on a lot of Tech.
Yeah, so speaking of TCU, they travel to Lawrence to take on the Kansas Jayhawks, who are yet to win a conference game but have looked somewhat competitive a few times this year. Not great, still losing by 20 most games.
Still
going to
have a new head coach.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I think Kevontae Turpin has a huge game. I think despite the news this week that TCU wins this game relatively easily, I think Michael Collins will have some nice numbers, because who hasn't against Kansas really at this point? I mean, for the most part, it'll be similar to Tech last week against them and Baylor against them. They'll get overwhelmed, and TCU will feel like their offense is back on track. Receivers will probably have a nice day. There's no upset brewing, even with all the stuff swirling around Fort Worth right now. I feel like there's just a different talent level going on in this game.
Yeah, no upset brewing, but I think it'll be maybe closer than expected.
Could be, yeah.
I think it'll be something like 30-20.
I just don't know how Kansas is going to score.
Yeah, well, they've scored on a few teams. I mean, you know, they haven't really played anyone great on defense. But, you know, they might. I think they'll be able to put up a few points. They're not very good on offense, I do agree. But I think TCU might come out a little bit unfocused on the
game.
There's
a very good possibility of that. And, you know, being on the road, too, not that Lawrence is a big bad place to play, but you know, maybe just, but maybe that'll be good for them getting out of Fort Worth for a little while. Who knows? I feel like this is definitely a down TCU team. The record indicates that, but I think you just see it. But ultimately, this ain't going to be like Charlie Strong in Texas against Kansas.
Yeah, talent should win out in that one. Kansas State travels to Norman. Kansas State appears to be kind of getting things back on track after absolutely destroying Oklahoma State. Now they're traveling to Norman to take on the Sooners, who appeared a lot better against TCU. They looked really good against the Horned Frogs. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, I think part of that was, you know, once Robinson went out, then the TCU offense started being able to move the ball a bit. But I expect Oklahoma to win this game. I think Kansas State can make it interesting, though. And it does seem like they're getting some of their mojo going a little bit. But is the Oklahoma defense ready to take another step? I think they've sort of settled down, or at least it appeared last week like they've kind of settled down, and maybe making that coaching switch, if anything, just instilled some confidence in these guys. I don't see Kansas State really shutting down Kyler Murray in this offense. So I go Oklahoma. I think they'll win breathing pretty easy, but I do think Kansas State can make it interesting for a little while.
Yeah, Kansas State has given OU some problems.
They're just not explosive enough to keep up, though. I mean,
yeah. No, they've given them problems, but this year, I mean, it really comes down to if OU can stop Alex Barnes even a little bit, this game will be a blowout.
Exactly.
I mean, that's just kind of how it is. OU will score too much. I think they'll end up winning this game something like 41-20, something along those lines. But I got OU in that one. A very interesting game. So two teams trending in the complete different direction right now. Texas travels to Oklahoma State, to Stillwater, to take on the Cowboys. Oklahoma State has not looked good in recent weeks, whereas Texas continues to just win. This game could be a little interesting. I saw the line was -3. So, I mean, it is, Texas comes in as a favorite, but not by much. And so, what do you think?
I don't really trust Oklahoma State, but I also don't really trust Texas all that much. I think Texas got their mulligan out of the way against Baylor with playing in a way that could get you beat. They're really feeling themselves right now, which does set up like a balloon ready to get popped at any moment. But if this was a better Oklahoma State team, I'd feel a lot better about it. I don't think that they're all that great. I think Texas defense is going to get after the quarterback, and was it Taylor Cornelius? I don't even remember his name these days. I think they're going to get after him. That Texas defense does have some holes at times. I mean, you can't exploit it, but they don't have like keying on Justice Hill, and their receivers don't even really scare you that much this year. You know what I mean? Like, there's not that explosive firepower on offense that we kind of got used to seeing. There's no James Washington on this roster anymore. So I think Texas is going to be able to run the football on Oklahoma State, and I think they're going to be able to probably get by in what is a pretty close game. I don't think it'll be a blowout by any means, but I don't expect the upset. I'd love the upset. I would love the upset, but I don't expect the upset.
Yeah, I'm sitting here really tempted to pick Oklahoma State to win this game, especially because it's a night game in Stillwater. It's Halloween weekend. I mean, this seems like it would set up for that. But Texas is just the better team.
Yeah.
I expect them to win this game. It'll be close. I think it'll be something like 38-35, something along those lines. 3-point difference. And then next week, I expect – actually, it'll be a little less scoring. 30-27, because next week I expect Oklahoma State to roll out Spencer Sanders when they come to Waco. And it'll kind of be very memorable to when they did that with Mason Rudolph back in – I believe that was 2014?
Mm-hmm.
2013 when they did that with him. I think they could. I think they could turn to the freshman and kind of take this as a rebuild year. It's a bold prediction, but
yeah,
I could see it happening.
Kind of withheld on him now. I'd be interested to see if he turns to him
in the last four.
Yeah. I don't know. That's an interesting prediction, but yeah, I expect Texas to win that game ultimately.
I do too.
I'd love it if it was in the other shoe or the shoe was on the other foot, but I just don't. I don't buy into Oklahoma State right now.
For sure. So now the Baylor game. Thursday night, Baylor Bears coming off a loss to Texas. West Virginia coming off a loss to Iowa State. The Bears travel to Morgantown. Nighttime game, 6 o'clock Central Time kickoff. What are you feeling?
I think Baylor loses by a couple touchdowns. I think I sent Colt 35-21, and I just throw numbers out there because I have to. for the Baylor prediction, but I don't like doing the numbers thing because I'm just not good at it. More of just a feel on the heads up. So while you'll never see me betting spreads, I just don't, me and numbers don't work. But just for the sake of it, you know, West Virginia by a couple touchdowns, I think they're going to be a little bit too explosive. I don't trust Baylor's defense all the way just yet. And I think Morgantown can be a little bit overwhelming if things don't go well early, but I do expect a good effort. I'm just not going to go with any type of an upset prediction on Thursday night.
Yeah, I'm not going with the upset either. Even though I do believe Baylor will be in this game throughout, I think a late score pushes it to two scores. I just think it'll be, I think it'll be a pretty close game. Mm-hmm. I really do. I got West Virginia winning this one 37-27. I do believe Baylor will have some success on offense, but I just think there's too, they're going to give up too many explosive plays. I can already see it happening. I hope it doesn't, but I can just see Will Greer taking the top off the defense one too many times.
Can already see somebody typing their anger at Chris Miller.
Yep. Can already see that happening. So, yeah, I don't think they're ready yet to get this win, but they're going to have a chance. They're going to have a chance in every game remaining.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll have a chance, but, yeah, I don't expect the upset.
So we're both going with the Bears to fall on Thursday night. What a joy it would be if that was not the case, and they could come back to Waco with victory number 5 and have 4 games remaining to get win number 6 and get bowl eligible. Just not banking on it, though. I think it's going to come down to having to win half your games after this week. But we'll see how it all unfolds on Thursday night. That's going to do it for us. I think we covered a lot of bases, a lot of ground on the show this week, and we will be back next week. Thanks to everybody for your questions on the board, and for those who haven't signed up to Sikkim365.com Premium just yet, you didn't see those questions, because you need to be a member of Premium to get in there and get yours in, and you're also missing out on a lot of other good information, S11 stats previews, Grayson and Colt on the recruiting beat, me recapping Rule every week, player interviews, some of that you have access to, but you got access to a whole lot more by joining the Premium section, so definitely check that out if you haven't already. But for Grayson, thanks as always, man. I'm Craig Smoke. We'll talk to you next week. This is the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com.